Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
It undermines the whole intent of the Endangered Species Act, and it's why on the committee we're looking at doing a reauthorization on the ESA because it hasn't been touched in about 50 years.
Arkansas Representative Bruce Westerman, chairman of the Natural Resources Committee on the Endangered Species Act.
And it's been weaponized and it's being used against people who work for a living in our country. It's going after the thing that allows them to do their job, and it's hurting the environment at the same time. So it's important that we take these issues head on, that we make it something that's really about recovering endangered species. You know, when it was first put in place, it had some success stories. The bald eagle, the grizzly bear, I don't think anybody doubts that, and I don't think many people think we should do away with it, but it should be something that works for species, not against species.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You know, for those who would want to downplay the importance of this, I would say go talk to the farmers in your district.
Arkansas Representative Bruce Westerman is chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee.
Ask them, how much extra burden do they need to be able to do the work on their land? It may be something from getting an additional permit, which can be a lot harder to when you're dealing with the federal government, or it may be shutting down your activity totally. And also, if my colleagues want to minimize the importance of this CRA, the only reason we're doing this is because the Biden administration made a silly rule. They didn't follow the science. They followed their environmental activist friends, and they made a rule, and it's our duties as members of Congress to be the voice for the American people. So I don't think it's trivial at all that we would take this up. I think it has very strong impacts across the country and could hurt businesses and hurt the environment all at the same time. So when silly people make silly rules, and we have to have silly meetings to reverse their silly rules.
Senate has passed and the House expected to take up SJ Res 9, which is congressional disapproval of the Fish and Wildlife Service.
The point is that industry now has the upper hand in species listing and not science.
Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona is the ranking member of the Natural Resources Committee.
It's not a negative impact on the timber industry. It's not a per se negative impact on agriculture per se, the listing of the bat. And despite the issue of extinction, the issue to need to protect habitat, I find it interesting in many of the examples of why these resolutions have to be enacted. It's not a question of silliness, but it's a question almost of exaggeration and anecdotal information. Science is the driver. Mm-hmm. And to take that out of science's hands, I think for all of Congress and for the agencies involved, takes a valuable tool. The CRAs are dangerous because it puts science, habitat, biodiversity in a second place and deals with anecdotal industry demands, mm-hmm. and doesn't deal with how ESA has functioned. That's why 99% of the species listed continue to exist, mm-hmm. and have not become extinct. And so it serves a purpose. Mm-hmm. And the issue to reduce habitat, take habitat out of the equation in species survival, are all efforts, I think, to undo the act itself, even though we're celebrating 50 years of success, mm-hmm. as we speak.
Congressional disapproval for northern long-eared bat and the lesser prairie chicken. Colorado's Joe Neguse.
My understanding was under 4D, under Rule 4D, grazing is allowed. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
Under Rule 4D, I believe you are correct.
Correct. And I also understand cultivated crops is permissible.
But once the chicken or the bat is listed, what you will see where there's been voluntary conservation efforts on private land, those dollars will be pulled back and that management won't take place.
I understand that's your view.
And then it's going to, on public lands, like I said, in the forest where I live, the efforts of the employees are going to be focused on managing a bat that they've never seen, but they know that it's migrated through the area.
And I recognize that's your view of what you think may happen. I guess I would just simply restate for the record, the rule enables a wide variety of activities the Fish and Wildlife Service believes can happen, ultimately, simultaneously happen or occur, development, any number of other areas.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So here's the theory behind food system transformation, which is essentially creating a market opportunity, multiple market opportunities that are local and regional that make our system more resilient.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack earlier this year talking about a food system transformation.
We learned during the pandemic that this efficient system that benefits large-scale folks was highly efficient, but not resilient. And certainly not resilient when you consider that in a record year, you know, a handful of folks benefit and most folks are still struggling. So our theory is let's create a different structure which where small and mid-sized producers have the ability not to accept a commodity price that's dictated by global activity and circumstances where somebody decides to invade a country and everything gets turned upside down, but somewhere where you have more control or where you can take advantage of a value-added proposition like organic or climate smart. So that's basically what we're doing. And what we've done is it's a combination of grants and loan guarantees that we've put together in various programs. And the key here, the beauty of this is, at least from a climate smart perspective, the Inflation Reduction Act contains an historic amount of resource for NRCS. Now, you aren't going to see a significant increase in 2023 in terms of NRCS capacity. It went up about 12% from the IRA. But next year, it doubles. And the year after that, it doubles again. So just think about that for just a second. That means there's going to be a whole lot of conservation, a whole lot of opportunity to embrace climate-smart agriculture practices. And as that's happening, we're building the market opportunity because there is definitely a desire on the part of consumers. They want to know where their food comes from. They want to know whether it's local. They want to know if it's been sustainably produced. And American agriculture and these small and mid-sized producers are in a good position to be able to respond specifically to that. And as they do it with product of the U.S., in some cases, they can also ensure people that, you know what, you're buying something that was, everything was done right here. So IRA is a critically important component. Farm bill, critically important component in terms of recognizing the need for this kind of system and basically authorizing and approving continued support for local and regional food systems, continued support for climate smart practices, continued support for organic, continued support for processing, and for the supply chain that supports processing. And I believe that at the end of the day, if we make a concerted effort to make this happen, the following happens. One, farm income for these small and mid-sized folks improves. Two, there are more rural jobs that are created. Three, American agriculture gets to a net zero future faster than anybody else does, and so we have an opportunity to obtain an advantage in an international market. And four, because something really intra-entrepreneurial and sustainable and exciting is happening in rural places, a lot of those young people who felt that they didn't have options now have many options. They can run that processing facility. They can run that food hub. They can run that farm-to-school program. They can run an organic operation, or they can help market a farm family that's now going online and selling across the United States. And with the Reconnect program and the broadband stuff that's going to expand access to meaningful high-speed internet from the infrastructure law, now you have the ability literally to market anywhere in the world. That's the future to me. That's the alternative to get big or get out. We've got to have an alternative to that. Otherwise, it's a very, you know, it's a pretty depressing picture. And I think American agriculture has a place in that transformation. And I think we're going to get there faster than a lot of other industries.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Chairman Colin, Ranking Member McGovern, members of the committee, I'm here today to speak in favor of SJ Res 9 and SJ Res 24.
Arkansas Representative Bruce Westerman is chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee.
These are two bipartisan Congressional Review Act resolutions that passed the Senate that we've had hearings and markups on in committee, so they've been through regular order in the House. And these CRAs would reverse the Endangered Species Act regulatory overreaches by the Biden administration. SJ Res 9 addresses the listing of the lesser prairie chicken under the Endangered Species Act. The lesser prairie chicken is actually the poster child for success of voluntary conservation. And although the lesser prairie chicken has long been known to be a boom and bust species, a decade ago, state governments, energy producers, and private landowners came together to voluntarily invest their own resources towards creating a healthy lesser prairie chicken population. Those efforts led to the creation of a range-wide voluntary conservation plan, and at least $65 million of private investment has gone into species conservation, and nearly 6 million acres of habitat has been conserved for the benefit of the lesser prairie chicken. And when you look at the amount of work that they've done, $65 million doesn't seem like that much money, but I think it shows how much better the private sector can stretch their conservation dollars than what the federal government often does. These investments have resulted in populations growing from less than 20,000 birds in 2013 to over 35,000 birds in 2020. Clearly, the plan has been successful, yet the Biden administration's listing of the species ignores everything I just highlighted. SJRES 24 addresses the uplisting of the northern long-eared bat from a threatened to an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act. The bat's main threat is not human activity. It is a disease known as white nose syndrome. This is freely admitted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, yet they have chosen to pursue a preservationist approach to recovering the species. Uplisting the long-eared bat will wreak havoc on the 37 states that make up its habitat and do little to save the species. It will also have a negative impact on other species because it will be used to stop beneficial management on public lands, and it will disincentivize conservation on private land. You'll be interested to know that 9 of the 13 members of the Rules Committee represent states that are the habitat for the northern long-eared bat. And ironically, most of the high-profile endangered species issues come from out west, but this is one that's more of an eastern and middle-of-the-country issue and has spared our colleagues in the west and in Texas. Actions by the Biden administration to uplist the bat to an endangered species will, again, increase the bureaucratic red tape for critical infrastructure projects and forest management, and in some cases, it'll grind those activities to a halt across the bat's 37-state range. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has already identified over 3,000 projects that will require additional permits for operations to continue. To date, 6 of the 37 states in the bat's range have developed habitat conservation plans to benefit the bat, while providing reasonable assurances to stakeholders that forest management and infrastructure projects can continue. These plans should continue to be developed and implemented, but if the service's uplisting remains in place, unfortunately, they won't. Now, I want to be clear. This resolution does not remove the bat from the endangered species list. Instead, it returns the species to its present or previous status as threatened.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Chairman Westerman, are either of the species we're discussing today at risk of extinction, let alone under severe threat from human activity?
That's Representative Nick Langworthy from New York. He's a member of the House Rules Committee, where on Tuesday, the committee taking up SJ Res 9 and SJ Res 24. Senate passed measures providing for congressional disapproval of the Fish and Wildlife Service.
I don't believe they're under threat of extinction, but I believe, and we know that the lesser prairie chicken, the numbers have improved from 20,000 to 35,000 in less than a decade because of voluntary conservation efforts. So they're moving in the right direction.
Arkansas Representative Bruce Westerman, chairman of the Natural Resources Committee, the two pieces of legislation looking at the lesser prairie chicken and the northern long-eared bat.
So it's strange that you would go from threatened to endangered when you're moving in the right direction, other than the fact that Mr. Roy brought out that these prairie chickens are located where a lot of oil and gas is produced, and they can be used to obviously throw a wet blanket on that. The northern long-eared bat, we do know that the white-nosed syndrome is causing a lot of death with the bats, and also restrained from using any kind of analogy with substances found at the White House and the white-nosed syndrome with northern long-eared bats. But we know that what the bat needs is good habitat to be able to succeed. We need to find something to address the fungal issue of white-nosed syndrome. And just making a rule at Fish and Wildlife saying, oh, these bats are endangered now. We're going to protect them more. That doesn't protect them more. That's just words on paper. The actual efforts take place out in the field when you do management and when you really do research to figure out how to combat the white nose syndrome, which is what's killing the bats.
So thanks to the long-eared bats designation under the Endangered Species Act, approximately how many projects have been required or will require regulatory reviews and permits?
I've heard the number 3,000 already just in, I believe that's the Forest Service alone. And that just multiplies across the country, because if you're a private developer and you go in, as Mr. Norman talked about, if they just think it's habitat, not if they find one of these, but if they think that the habitat could support one, then you're going to have to go through all the bureaucratic red tape and hurdles to be able to do your project.
And these are infrastructure projects often critical to rural areas and communities, correct?
They're very critical. They're critical to the whole country, and I think people don't realize how cumbersome the overregulation can be, especially when it's been weaponized and used by people just to stop progress and stop development.
So, you know, let's just cut through the hysteria. When conservation works, then let's acknowledge that it's worked and adjust these protective designations accordingly. But above all, let's just think about the impact that every stringent designation, every new regulation, and every new review requirement has on the lives of Americans living in rural areas who often bear the brunt of these burdens.
Both of those resolutions have passed with bipartisan support from the Senate, headed to the House floor. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Presidents have, you know, they have to talk about a lot of things. And when they talk about things, they can't talk about everything. And that's why they got a cabinet.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking earlier this year to members of the National Farmers Union.
They hire people and they ask people to go out and say, be the spokesperson for the administration in this area. And I happen to be, as Ag Secretary, it's my part of my responsibility to be the rural spokesperson. So the executive order was one indication. Then in cabinet meetings, the president always asks about what are we doing in rural areas. I mean, and that's not always, that doesn't always happen, okay? So he's a guy that's genuinely concerned about this. He basically directed me to figure this out. You know, I went on the campaign. When he called me to ask me to take this job, he said, I've got some bad news for you. And I thought, well, okay, you know, I've already been in a cabinet. I don't need to, you know, have another job. He says, I want you to go back to ag. And he said, the reason I do is because you talked about this vision. Well, you've convinced me that it's the right vision. Now you got to go make it happen. That was the bad news. But the resources that we have has allowed us to jumpstart this and to begin to have people understand the possibility. And what I want this audience and every audience I've been speaking to understand is it's not just isolated organic over here and local and regional food over here and processing over here. It's part of a concerted effort to create another model, one that doesn't necessarily require us to not produce. We want to produce. The world needs us to produce. But one that creates more revenue opportunities within that same small and mid-sized farming operation, so that those who choose to remain small or mid-sized, or for whatever reason that's where they are, that they're not faced with the dilemma and the pressure of having to say to the next generation, we just can't continue. So one thing I know about everyone in this room who's a farmer is at the end of the day, that's really what they want, is the ability to say to that next generation, which is true of everybody in America. You always want the next generation to have better than you had it. And I think American farmers will like the ability to be able to say to the next generation, if son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, if you want to farm, there's opportunity here. And so that's what this is. And it's a system. It's not just an isolated set of programs. It's a holistic approach to try to create as many new profit centers as possible, and then try to create mechanisms through cooperators, through rural business, through the business centers, through mechanisms to make it easy for people to interact with that system, to be able to figure out, well, I can take advantage of that ecosystem market, or I can take advantage of that climate smart agriculture commodity, or I can take advantage of that farm to school program. People have to be able to see how they personally can take advantage of it, and that's the goal.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Today's resolutions that could be the last items that that go to the House floor before members return to their districts for the next 6 weeks.
Arizona Representative Ron Grijalva is the ranking member of the House Natural Resources Committee.
Undoubtedly, when we go back, our constituents will have questions about what Congress has done this year to address the real issues that Americans are facing, and rightfully so.
He was testifying on a congressional disapproval of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's endangered species status.
There will be many issues that come up, but as we find ourselves in one of the most unforgivable hot summers in our recorded history, I am certain that many will want to know, one, what are we doing to slow down climate change? And two, what are we doing to help communities that are already hurting from the impacts of climate change? Right now, the heat waves across the country, like the 25 consecutive 110-plus degree days in my home state of Arizona, are causing suffering and even death. Workers won't have adequate protections for heat exposure. Power grids are folding under the pressure. Local businesses can't operate as usual. Unfathomably warm waters off the coast of Florida are threatening to bleach corals, kill marine life, and upend the state's tourism economy. And that's just one part of the climate change equation. Our constituents will also wonder what we're doing to protect them from stronger hurricanes, more intense wildfires, and wildfire smoke, flooding, storm surges, drought, and all the other extreme weather events that are confronting that we see in the news every day and we experience in our lives. These are big questions, and I'm sure the American people are expecting big answers. But as it stands now, it seems that as if my colleagues across the aisle are satisfied with telling them that one thing they've decided was the most important was to pass before we left for 6 weeks was this bizarre vendetta against the endangered northern long-eared bat and the lesser prairie chicken. Not only are these measures not what the American people asked for, they are going nowhere. The White House has already signaled that they will veto these resolutions. This is a pointless political exercise and stunt. But of course, it's one that will keep Republicans' industry friends happy. And judging by everything else we've seen this year, that seems to be the GOP's priority number one. In the Natural Resources Committee, we have had hearings after hearing, bill after bill, most notably Republicans H.R. 1, the Polluters Over People Act, that does the bidding of the fossil fuel and mining industry and is a blueprint for everything else that has followed on that committee and on energy and commerce as well. Sometimes it's a giveaway of our public lands and oceans. Sometimes it's climate science denial. Sometimes it's a free pass for polluters to leave a mess and not clean it up. But perhaps more often, it's a thinly veiled attempt to gut our most fundamental environmental laws, namely the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and the Endangered Species Act, much like we're seeing today. These attacks on our environmental protections are a shameless gift to the industry, a gift at any time, but doing it while we watch the greatest environmental crisis of our time hurt and even kill Americans all over the country, it's unforgivable. The American people, and yes, the bats and chickens deserve better than these bills, and there is, in my mind, the continued use of cherry-picked information, anecdotal information, as the basis for these CRAs, I think is the most offensive thing to anybody that would like to see this debate occur based on empirical information and science. I go back to that because that's the basis of ESA and the antithesis of what we see with these two CRAs.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
With most of the country boiling in record or near record-breaking heat.
Heat stroke, heat illness is something we shouldn't just kind of glance over.
Ohio State University Health and Safety Professor Dee Jepson says even in a normal summer, people die from the heat, but this summer, much worse than normal. And Jepson says it's almost impossible to predict who might be more susceptible to heat problems than others.
Because each one of our bodies, you know, are so different.
And our reaction to heat can vary with things like age.
It's not just age. It could also be some of the medications that people are on. And we know for a fact that some of the medications, even our blood pressure medications, can affect how our bodies react to heat.
Jepson says one thing has been proven without a doubt. If a person has suffered heat stroke in the past,
they are more susceptible to that again, you know, sooner.
And need to be extra careful. Gary Crawford, Washington.